seats and quiet for our keynote speaker. So everybody ready? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Sheila J. is going to introduce, she's our speaker's chair, and she's going to introduce our speaker for tonight.
You are in for a treat tonight. We have Tammy, who is going to be our speaker, and Tammy is really interesting. You know, I do all those workshops with the Chronic Slippers, and I'll always ask at the beginning of the workshop, I'll say, you know, are there people here, raise your hand if you're somebody who got abstinent and you came in how, and actually let's do it here. Raise your hand if you got abstinent and how and you have not lost your abstinence since you came in. That's terrific. That's really cool. Give those people a hand, round of applause, right? And then raise your hand if you're somebody who you came in and you got abstinent and you lost it and then you've gotten it again or you want to get it again, either way. So that should be all the rest of us. Great. Good round of applause for those group of people. Tammy is in that first category, and I didn't know that. And the reason that I didn't know that is because Tammy, very uniquely, much like William Silkworth and Sister Ignatia, were people who weren't alcoholics, but they really reached out to the alcoholic community. And Tammy has always reached out to people who are chronic slippers, despite the fact she doesn't have any experience with that. So I was really surprised, and I've known Tammy for the couple of years that she's been here and how she has 2 years and a month of abstinence. And I had no idea because she's so compassionate with people who are struggling and have struggled, and she's, you know, talked with me about people and, you know, supported, you know, people as they were reaching out and things and reaching out to me. And so Tammy is just a wonderful example of what it is we do here. You are in for a treat. It is Tammy N. from Canoga Park. Please join me in welcoming Tammy, our keynote speaker.
Hello, my name is Tammy. I'm a compulsive eater. Hi, this has been a wonderful conference. I know you all are enjoying it, and I am too. So just to let you know, yes, I'm Tammy. I'm a compulsive eater. I have been abstinent for 2 years and 2 months. I am 46 pounds down, and I am a food, inventory, and step sponsor. So I want to share my story with you. I just realized I left my pictures up on this in my room, so I'm sorry about that. But I want to say that I had been born into an alcoholic household. My father and my mother were both alcoholics, and my father was also physically and mentally abusive towards my mother. I'm going to take this. Yes, my father was mentally and physically abusive towards my mother. And my father was a womanizer, and that's basically what they've always fought about, him being out with other women. And my mother said that when I was about a little over 3 years old, that one time he hit her in the face and shattered her glasses in her face. And she said, I was standing there as a little girl, and that I went into a state of shock when I saw that. And that's when she decided to leave my father. So when she left my father, now we're living with my mother, me and my brother, who's 11 months under me. We went to stay with my mother. Now, my mother had always lived in a household where her father was very strict, and she lived with her stepmother, and then she went from that household to living with my father. So now she's living out on her own, and now she's a party person. She just loved going out. And she continued to be an alcoholic, to drink. And so while she was doing that, I was left at home to really take care of my brother. And then maybe about 3.5, 4 years later, she conceived my sister out of wedlock. So then I started taking care of her. And to a certain extent, I even took care of my mother when I could. When she would pass out on the couch, I would go and I would cover her up. And that was the type of life we lived in. And I, as a little girl, I didn't know how to cook. But the first thing I would prepare for my brother and my sister was flour and sugar slapped together, and that and made it like that. We made sandwiches. So isn't it ironic? I said, here, flour and sugar is what became a problem for me, and that's what I first learned how to prepare, was flour and sugar. So we went on to be like that, and then, like I said, my sister is 4 years younger, and her father, one night when my mother was passed out on the couch up in our bedroom, he came up there, and he asked me to follow him into my mother's bedroom. And I didn't know why he wanted me to follow him, but I got up and I went with him where he sexually molested me. And so I remember the next day I went down and I was laying on the couch and I just felt really sick to my stomach. And I was just moaning and groaning all day long. And my mom was busy in the kitchen and then her girlfriend came over and she said, "What's the matter with Tammy?" And my mother said, "I don't know. I think she got the flu." And she said, "She acts like she's pregnant." When she said that, I moaned louder, you know. But nobody paid attention to me. Nobody asked what was wrong with me. Had they asked, I believe I would have told her what had happened. But I stuffed it down. I didn't say anything about it because that was my father, my sister's father. And I love my sister. And I knew that if I told my mother what he had done, that she would have stopped him from coming over. And I knew that would have hurt my sister. So I didn't say anything. I just stuffed it down. And it wasn't shortly after that, because it was around Thanksgiving time, I went down. I coerced my brother going down to the kitchen with me. And we went to the refrigerator and took that thing out of the refrigerator that you bake for Thanksgiving. And we ate all the middle out. Ate all the middle of it out. And then I took the shell and put the shell back in the box. And put it back into the refrigerator. And only when Thanksgiving Day came, my mother, when she took it out of the box, she said, "Who ate this?" You know, and I just immediately confessed. I said, me and my brother, me and Delia, we ate it. And then when she asked my brother, he said, "Oh, no, I ain't eat it. I didn't eat it," you know. And I looked at him. I didn't know why he wanted to lie about it. And he got the whooping, and I didn't. I didn't get a whooping over that. So that was just one of the first times I remember eating compulsively. And it was always the flour and sugar, the sweet stuff, the junk stuff that I really enjoyed eating. And so I ate like that then, and then I continued to eat that way. And my mother eventually, she was always getting into different things. And then she started having these relationships. She was into a lesbian relationship, and even though I know that that is acceptable now, and it wasn't back then, and I was wondering, well, what is she doing now? And why is she doing that? And I would feel so ashamed when she would come home with her lovers. And it was just another thing to just bury down, because that was just something my mother did. So, but like I said, I just was raised like that, and even though I ate compulsively, I didn't gain weight. I was always skinny. And I went through high, and always active. So in high school, I would eat compulsively, but I was a high stepper for our rebelettes. We were called rebelettes in high school, and we would march during the football games, and I was a volleyball captain and basketball. I played basketball and did drill team march. So I was always active. And so then when I went away to college, the same thing. I would stay active in college. But I would always eat compulsively. And, you know, I didn't know anything about compulsive eating, but I knew I ate differently than others. I knew that when I would see a big dessert, that I would want to eat the whole thing and held the whole thing rather than have a slice or a piece or something. And then I just chalked it up. Well, I eat a lot, but at least I don't drink or smoke. So I just left that alone. You know, and then, so Then when I got out of college, I left college. I didn't graduate. It was just like I couldn't keep my mind focused on anything. I was always doing something and leaving this half done and doing something else. And I was like I wasn't bringing anything to completion. You know. Then I got married when I left college and I moved out here to California. And within a year after being out here, I got married. And I wound up marrying someone who was just like my father. He was physically and mentally abusive towards me, and he was a womanizer. So we would fight, you know, and it was different, though, than with my mother, because I fought back. He came one time, and he hit me in the face, and then I went down like I was crying, and then when he came over to look at me, I come up with my fist and punched them in the nose and gave them a nosebleed. And then another time we were fighting, and I went over and reached me. They called them boombox, a big radio. And God and I hit them upside the head with it. You know, so I fought back. I just didn't take that. So I was married for 10 years. About 8 years into the marriage, I got pregnant with my son. And I didn't know I was a boy at the time, but I was pregnant. And I don't know, maybe somewhere in my subconscious mind, I just thought, you know, I don't want to raise a kid in this kind of an atmosphere. I don't, in an abusive household. I was born in that type of household. I don't want to raise my child in that. So I went to him, and I told him, you need to get some help. And he said, well, you provoke me. You provoke me to do that. I said, no, you need to get some help for that. And until you do, you know, I was leaving. So if he insists he didn't need no help, I was the problem, so I left. I was 8 months pregnant and went to live with my mother. And it was just a scary time. Here I am pregnant and about to have this child sleeping on my mother's couch, but I just couldn't stay in that type of situation. But I continued to eat compulsively. You know, by now, though, when I was eating compulsively, I wasn't staying skinny anymore. Before I was pregnant with my son, I was starting to gain weight. And what I had found was fasting. I would fast. And I would fast, and I thought that was gold, because I could fast having nothing but water, drinking nothing but water for 10 days, and I would drop the weight. I would drop like 18, 22 pounds, and so I would get the weight off that way, and so that's what I did. So about the next 20 years, that's how I would lose the weight, is that I would go on these fasts. The whole time when I would be fasting, I would be thinking about the flour and sugar. I would be longing for the flour and sugar. And when I would break the fast, I would break it with the flour and sugar. I would go after and just eat it. And it would taste horrible. It would taste horrible for about the first 2 or 3 days but I would just keep eating it until I fell in love with it all over again. And so I would continue to do that. But now back to me being pregnant with my son, and to just stay with her. And then after I had my son, I went and moved into my own apartment, and so it was just me and him, and I would take him over to the babysitter, and I would walk to work, you know, because I didn't have a car, and that's just the way it was. But again, like I said, I would eat compulsively, and then the weight just kept coming on. And I remember one night I was sitting on the bed, and I was eating a box of sweets, and I was thinking, oh, I'm just eating these because I'm not having sex anymore with my husband, you know, so that's why I'm eating this. And then about halfway through the box, I was like, you know, I never did have that much sex, you know, so I just put the box away. But like I said, I just would eat compulsively, and then I developed this disease. And I was like, oh, I got this disease. I said, oh, no, how could I get this disease? I'm a healthy person. I exercise. How did I get this disease? You know, and I know about the diseases because I have seen in different members of my family, they would get one disease after another. And I was like, oh, no, I'm on the same road. I have this disease. I have to take prescription medicine. I said, I'm on the same road as I see my other family members, and they get one disease after another, and eventually they get their limb amputated. I know about that because my brother had to get his leg amputated about 5 years ago because he is a victim of this disease. He's a compulsive eater, but, of course, he's in denial. And so I knew about the diseases. And I said, I need to do something. But still, I ate compulsively for even 5 or 7 years after I had gotten the disease. And I just knew I had to do something about it. Then one time my girlfriend, she told me, she said, I'm going up to this church, and they have this program. And I'm going to go to the food meeting, you know. And so then she went to it, and I said, how was it? She said, well, it was pretty good. She said, girl, I sat in that chair, and I cried. I said, well, who was you crying for? I said, it's a food program. What you crying for? You know, so then I went the following week, and while I was, they sat in a circle, and this is at the church, like I said, we sat in a circle, and while we were sitting there, then they started going around saying, and they were saying they were compulsive eaters. And I never heard of that. I was like, whoa, compulsive eater. I said, oh, that sounds terrible. I said, why would anybody want to say that, you know? And so I said, I'm not a compulsive eater. I said, I may be an overeater. I mean, I prefer eating maybe 9 instead of 2 or something, but I'm not a compulsive eater, you know. So, but I noticed that as they went around, that they were sharing their feelings, what they were going through. And by the time they went full circle and got to me, I said, you know, I thought this was just another food program. I said, but you're asking me to get behind the emotions as to why I eat. I said, and that's going to be hard. That's going to be hard. I said, would you please pray that I'll be able to do that? Now, this program was not a 12-step program, but they encourage you to join a 12-step program. And then one of the members in this food program, she was a member of CEA Howe. I didn't know that at the time, but I know in the year time that I knew her, she lost over 50 pounds. And so, and she was, when she would share, she would tell us how much, oh, I just love my food program. She said, I just sometimes I forget to eat. And I looked at her, you forget to eat. And then another time she said, oh, it's so much food. We have so much food to eat. I just don't see how I can eat all this food. And I'm looking at her, and I was like, all this food. I was like, and she's losing weight. I'm seeing her this whole year there. I see her losing weight. Then I did approach her one time. I said, what? Tell me about this program you're in. And she gave me a meeting guide. And she told me about the program, about the flour and sugar, and that's all I heard, no flour and sugar. And I just took the guide, I put it in my purse, and I left it there for about a year. And then the other friend who was in the food program, she decided to go to a CEHA meeting. So she went to a meeting, and when she came home, she called me up. She said, Tammy, I joined this food program, and I'm going to lose some weight. And I was thinking to myself, I don't want her to be the only one to lose some weight. So the next week, I went to a meeting. And so I kind of came in a little late, so I went sat down and just listened to what they said. When I was listening to the speaker, and she would use terms like, it's not about the food, you know. And then she said, I had to get out of the food and on with my life. And I'm listening to her, and it just intrigued me to hear that. It's not about the food. I'm like, it's all about the food for me. And it's like, and when she said, I have to get out of the food and go on with my life, I was like, what does that mean? What does that mean? I said, I have never thought about going anything else in life but the food, you know. And then when the people would stand up and they would say how much weight they lost, and 50 pounds here, 100 there, and I was just very impressed with all the weight loss that was in the room. And then while I was sitting there, one lady had gotten up and was leaving the meeting, and she came over to me, and she touched me, and she said, I'll call you. And then I was thinking, why? What did I do? You know? And so they said, okay, after the meeting, if you need a sponsor, come over to this area. So I figured, okay, well, I have a friend who went a week before me. She had already joined the program. And so I got up and I went over and I got a sponsor. I got a sponsor, and then she took me to the literature table and I got my books. And I got my books, and then she talked to me for a little while, and I started the program the next day. So just say. And so after I started the program, and I would call her in the morning and did my reading and writing and answering the question, and I'm reading these questions, and it comes to, I have to admit that I'm a compulsive eater. I was like, well, with the way this question is saying, I was like, I am a compulsive eater. So I had to tell her that I'm a compulsive eater. And then I got to a question where it said about, have you been the God of your life? And I had to admit, I was the God of my life. Here, I've been a Christian all these years, but I was God of my life. I say what I eat. I say what I do. And I had to write that down. And I got to read it to the stranger. And this was about day 4. And with that, I was like, that's enough of that. I said, I'm not going to do this program anymore, you know. But when I talked to my sponsor, she said, Tammy, I said, what? You know, she said, Tammy, just continue with the program. She said, stay in this with these first 30 days. She said, all you need to do is just get through these first 30 days. She said, doors are going to open up for you if you get through these days. And she said it so lovingly. And then when I thought about my friend who went a week ahead of me, I said, and she's still in the program. So I said, okay, you know, I'll stay in the program. Now, I thought with the flour and sugar, I thought, okay, so we stopped eating the flour and sugar for a while. And then gradually, they're going to show me how to eat it moderately, you know. By day 14, when I realized, you know, I don't think these people will ever let me eat flour and sugar again, I made an outreach call, and when the person answered the phone, I just said, am I ever going to be able to eat flour and sugar again? I didn't say hi. I didn't say my name. And then there was this silence on the other line. And then I stopped and waited. And then he said, not today. Not today. And somehow when he said, just not today, I can receive that. Okay, I can do it just today. And so I continue to just not eat the flour and sugar and continue to work the program. And like I said, and here I am now, it's about 2 years later. But and she was right. After 30 days, oh, the clarity of mind, that happened like within the first 2 weeks when my mind started clearing up. Now, I have my son, he's 19 today, but I remember when he was younger and I was into the flour and sugar and I would stay in the house and close the door and wouldn't turn on lights. He'd come in from playing and he would turn on lights and things, but I would take care of him to a certain extent, but when I got into the flour and sugar, it was like, go on outside, do whatever you want to do, just leave me alone. And so I was pretty much like that. But when my mind started clearing up, when I started eating abstinently, then I was better alert as to how to take care of him and to stay on track, because my kid gave me a lot of drama. He's a boy, but he's a girl in a boy's body, you know. So once my mind started clearing up, then I was able to stay on top of him and doing different things. And I remember, like, he was getting put out one school after another, and I would tell him, okay, we got to do something else. And then I told him, I said, you know, you're going to join this program in Utah. You need to go there and learn a job trade. He said, well, what if I don't want to go there? I said, well, then get out of my house, you know, because I just stayed on track in doing that. So he's there now. So I just continue with the program, continue to work the program. And it's just been a blessing for me. It's been a blessing to be a part of it. I enjoy doing service for others. I enjoy being sponsoring others. I enjoy being sponsored. And so now that I've been in the program these 2.5 years, well, 2 years and 2 months, now I am in maintenance. I'm in maintenance now. And I'm, doing the maintenance questions, I must say. And I had always thought about, the different ways I would encourage myself from program and even other things that I would do just to stay abstinent. Because I would have those struggles where sometimes I would want to eat, the flour and sugar, even though I've been abstinent. And I know that when you told me to have a higher power, and my higher power is God, I could relate to that. You know, when you said, make your higher power God, I said, how come I didn't think of that before? How come I didn't think of asking God to come alongside and help me through this? Because he's always been there before. He was there with me when I was raised in an alcoholic household. He took care of me when no one else did. He was there with me when I was sexually molested, because when my sister's father came to me the second night and asked me to go to the bed with him, I put on my hand and I said no. I said no, and this little girl did that, and only God could have strengthened me to do that. He was there with me when I was raised living with my husband in a physically and mentally abusive relationship. And God has been there with me to raise my son from, you know, from being a single mom to him being off in school right now. And so I knew then, I said, if he could be with me in all those times, he could be with me in this program. So when I would have those times when I would say, you know, God, would you help me today? Would you help me to just eat my meal and stay abstinent just for today? He'd come and he'd meet me there. When I asked him, God, would you just help me through this one meal? Just to eat abstinently for this one meal. He would come and he would meet me there. When I would just ask God, oh, just at this moment, I'm just going through some things at this moment, and I just want to eat compulsively. I said, God, would you help me there? And no matter how far back I would go, he would meet me there, and he would see me through. So that's what God has done for me in this program. And I have always been one to encourage myself through songs, because I sing in choirs and so forth. And there was one song when I was going through my first 30 days, there was one song that I would sing, and I want to share it with you. And it says, I can begin again with the passion of a child. My heart has learned the secret of a life that's still worthwhile. I can reach out again, far beyond where I have gone. Like a dreamer who's awakened to a life that's just begun. For a new beginning is not just for the young. No matter what people say, it's not just for the young. No matter what you've been told, it's not just for the young. And that's how I would encourage myself, just through singing songs. When I was saying I wouldn't stay on track with college and so forth, this year, January of this year, I graduated Bible college. So, and like I said, my son is away in Utah, and our relationship together is just so beautiful. I just put him on a plane this past Sunday to go back to school, and he was doing wonderful, and I'm so glad of that. Now that I'm in the work in the maintenance part of the program, and I'm just learning to make amends, I made amends with my mother just a week ago. Just sat down and talked with her, and I didn't know that was going to be so free and so loving. I held her and loved her and told her how much I always loved her. I just wanted her to spend time with me. And she said, I know that. I know that. So, and I just have this program to thank for that. I have the people in the program. I thank you for all of your support. You've been very supportive towards me, and I thank you. I thank God for the program. I thank God for the spirituality. I didn't know when I came to this program that I was going to grow spiritually, but I am. I'm growing spiritually in this program. I have spiritual awakening in this program when I work with other people, when I sponsor other people. I just had an awakening, Lord. Thank you for this opportunity to help someone else. Lord, as I help them and be an example to my family of living an abstinent life, I said, show my family, Lord, so they can get off this disease after another. Help them, Lord. So I know that as I reach out and help them, help others, that God will help my family members. So thank you, Sheila, for inviting me to speak. And thank you, C.A. Howe, for your love and support.
There she is. I was just to say, Renee, our silent auction chair. Oh, somebody turned in keys. Somebody's not leaving here tonight. Okay. It looks like, looks like a very nice car. I might just have to go and check it out myself. We would like the fashion models to go out and meet in the hallway now. And we have more things. What's this? More lost and found?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
The fashion show and the